You're listening to Wolves Potluck.
And hey, welcome to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And we are here for our April 2026 mid-month book news check-in, where we highlight some of the latest Asian American book news and publishing announcements. As always, Books and Boba is supported in part by our listeners. So if you've been enjoying our podcast and want to become a bigger part of our book club, head on over to patreon.com/booksandboba, where as an official Patreon supporter, you gain access to our members-only Discord server. We can chat with us and fellow book club members in real time about all sorts of topics, including our monthly book club picks. And if you join us at the Honey Boba level, you also gain access to our monthly bonus podcast, Boba Chats, as well as the opportunity to help us pick a quarterly Patron's Choice book club pick, of which our current book club pick, The Elsewhere Express, was chosen for us by our Honey Boba patrons. So thank you to everyone who has supported us so far. And as always, we hope to see more of you there in the future. But yeah, we are halfway through the month of April. A lot of stuff happening out there in the world, but also we're in a very like K-pop time of our lives. There are lots of K-pop stuff going on. You're gearing up for a very busy concert season. Or have they already started?
What are you talking about? Really? I have been like BTS already did their concerts like online. They're in Japan right now. So like last week was just me not sleeping and like staying up till like 6 a.m. watching concerts. And Coachella happened, did not care. So I guess it is like a K-pop time for a lot of people. But yeah, for me, it's just I feel like I've been on that grind for so long that let's just say, OK, so BTS did their comeback. I'm not seeing them until August.
Yeah.
And that's the first concert I'm going to. And the other concerts I'm going to is like in September. So it's already started. It's a marathon for me. You know, I just realized that this is my first time doing an April mid-month episode with you in like 2 years. Because the last 2 years, last year I was in Korea and Japan. And then the year before that, I was in London. So Marvin had to go solo for the last two Aprils.
You know, I do recall having an annual like solo episode. I didn't realize they were both in April. Well,
yeah, because it was for my birthdays. I think it's because when COVID happened, I was like kind of upset because it was a milestone birthday and I had done like surprise birthday parties for like all of my friends. And this was right around when we were in lockdown. So like no one was leaving their house, like everything was shut down. So I think since then, I was like, when the world opens up, I'm going to go like all out on my birthdays. I'm going on international travels. So I really like, you know, spent all my money traveling and doing concerts.
Yeah. Glad to have you here for this April 2026. And as always, we start off our mid-month book news episodes by going over some of the latest published announcements for books by Asian and Asian American authors. This list is compiled, as always, by Rira through various online sources. So thank you so much for taking the time and putting this list together. Let's get started. Rira, what is our first book deal of the month?
All right, so our first book deal is in an exclusive submission, Ballantine acquired North American rights to Vaishnavi Patel's The Library of Lost Time. The novel centers on a woman who follows the trail of the man she loves through time and across different worlds that are created whenever a book is banned. Alternate realities in which the book never existed. A summer 2027 publication is scheduled. And just FYI, Patel is the author of Kalkei, which reimagines a despised queen from the epic Ramayana. And it was like a really popular book. I remember seeing it like displayed everywhere. So it's really cool that another like cool fantasy book is out.
Yeah, I'm curious about the premise of like entering worlds where banned books don't exist. So I wonder if they're going to involve like real life books or are they going to be all like fictional books, right? Like what if we enter a world where like what's a banned book? Like some books that like we all read like back in the day that like have become like...
I mean, it's like hard because I feel like my school was pretty good about reading books that are now banned in classrooms. So I like don't have like a frame of reference. I guess 1984 by George Orwell. Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison. Those are titles that just like come to mind when it comes to like classics that are probably banned.
Yeah.
Animal Farm. Like, I feel like George Orwell is definitely one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, a really interesting premise that I'm really curious to see how it's executed. So yeah, congrats to Vaishnavi on the book deal. Okay, next up, Astra House preempted North American rights to Box, 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 Box by Japanese author Wan Sakamoto, told from the POV of four manual laborers. This debut novella holds up a dark mirror to our supply chain society, as well as the latent madness of our addiction to efficiency. No translator has been named yet, and the release is scheduled for spring 2027.
Yeah, so we just looked it up, and Box, 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 Box came out in Japan last year. And the translation's coming out next year. So this is a pretty fast turnaround for a translated novel.
Yeah, I think it was nominated or won a couple awards in Japan. So I think that's why Astra House scooped it up. And I really like the premise because, when I went to business school, we definitely studied Japanese style, like they call it Kanban efficiency, which is like a supply chain methodology, I think created by Toyota and like Japanese auto manufacturers. And you know, that sort of efficiency has been like the gold standard for supply chains all across the world. And I think as we've seen through the magic capitalism, efficiency often involves the instrumentalization of like human resources and people, which kind of leads to, I guess, our societal issues today, right? A lot of our societal issues today. And so it's kind of interesting to like see a novel examine the dark consequences of the pursuit of efficiency and how like modern consumerism like feeds off of it.
Yeah, and it's funny that we're reading this book deal when there's been like 11 warehouse fires due to the Viva La Revolution of like American people saying, hey, all you needed to do was pay us a living wage and setting things on fire quite literally. So
yeah.
This is an experience that all capitalist societies are feeling now in late stage capitalism, where humans are not seen as humans. They're just seen as laborers and just numbers. And this sounds really interesting. And I'm really looking forward to the translation when it comes out next year. All right. So next up, Crown Books for Young Readers bought in a preempt Yu Anxia's Mama's Magical Hands, a picture book about how a mama's hands have the ability to conjure and comfort, feed and fly, navigate and nurture. But as mama's belly swells with life, the child learns that even little hands are capable helpers and carers. Publication is slated for spring 2028. So this sounds like a picture book for...
future older siblings, yeah.
Yeah, future older siblings.
Which is, it's definitely a thing. Like, I definitely have heard stories of how I acted up when my younger brother was about to be born and was born.
I don't really remember because my middle brother and I are 3 years apart. So I don't really remember, like, when my mom was pregnant with him. But I do remember my mom telling me, like, oh, like, the first week was kind of bad. Like, you would take your brother and hide him in a closet. There was one time you like almost suffocated him by like putting a blanket over his head.
Oh, no.
But she was like, but after the first week, you were like very helpful and, was a model older sister.
Yeah.
I feel like this is a picture book that is probably going to be really helpful for parents who are like gonna have to explain why there's another baby in the house and why you can't. It's like why mom can't do everything now that she is like pregnant and physically unable to do things.
Yeah, for sure. It's always great to have my kids are getting more interested in books these days. Now, they don't understand anything we're saying, but they do like the pictures and the sound of our voice while we're reading to them. So I'm definitely starting to see like firsthand like the power of like stories to communicate things to children, even if they're like too young to really fully understand. kind of just getting familiar with the pictures and the idea of like maybe someone else coming into the world to join you. It's important. So yeah, congrats to Yuan on the book deal. Okay. Next up, Bloomsbury has bought at auction the YA horror anthology, The Kids Came Back Wrong, which will be edited by Wenyi Li. The book is pitched for fans of Weapons and Stranger Things and follows a group of teens who disappeared into the woods on a school trip as kids and came back changed in ways they can't describe. The anthology features interconnected stories from authors Kylie Lee Baker, H.E. Edgman, Tigus Girma, Anna Hurtado, Wenyi Li, P.H. Lowe, Zoe Hanamikuda, Mark Oshiro, Aiden Polydoros, Allison Saft, Chong Tan Tran, Joel Wellington, and Andrew Joseph White. Publication is scheduled for fall 2027.
This sounds pretty fun. Gives me Goosebumps energy.
A little bit. It seems a little bit more sinister than Goosebumps. Goosebumps usually it's like a moral, like Saturday morning cartoon story wrapped around like a horror like conceit. This gives more like what was there's like the teen version of Goosebumps called Fear Street. Usually more murder in those books, like more slasher type shenanigans by R.L. Stine. But The Kids Come Back Wrong is definitely a good callback to like those reanimator stories where it's like, oh, someone died, but they came back to life. But then something came back with them or they came back, you know, wrong. Right. I think those like kind of unsettling vibes is what they're invoking. Right.
Yeah. I'm really curious because the stories are interconnected. So how did the editing process work for that? And I'm sure like, some of the authors, like I know Trang Tan Tran, like their books were very much about like Vietnamese ghosts. And I'm like, how does that connect with some of the other authors' short stories? And yeah, like what did the kids experience in the woods? I'm very curious.
Yeah, definitely curious to see how it all comes together. I feel like as an anthology, you want each story to kind of have its own, play by its own rules, play by its own conventions, but then had to have like an overarching like horror story. I wonder if it's gonna get meta, right? I think that'd be interesting too. But yeah, really looking forward to it. Like, always great to see, you know, a lot of I'm assuming, actually I don't know what all the ethnicities for these authors are, but always cool to see some Asian authors be mixed into these genre anthologies, right?
Yeah, I mean, familiar names in the list of authors here. Some we've interviewed on the show, some we've, talked about in other book deals or picked for book club picks. So, yeah. All right. Next up, Hogarth won U.S. rights to two books by Suvankam Tamavongsa. The first book, Crush, is a story collection about often overlooked characters in the grip of desire who see through the lies, jokes, and postures that disguise and distract us. And the second book, It Was an Ordinary Name, is a work of nonfiction dedicated to her nephew and the memory of her late brother that unfurls insights on memory and creation. Crush is set to be published in spring 2027, and the second title has no publication date.
Yeah, so we've read Suvankam's short story collection, How to Pronounce Knife, a few years ago on the For Book Club. And I know her novel, Pick a Color, has been floated as a potential patron's choice pick before as well. So definitely awesome to see her come back with not just one, but two books in the works.
Yeah, and How to Pronounce Knife was like probably one of the more discussed books in our book club discussions in our forums, because all of the stories were very like very poignant. I do remember. So
yeah, I mean, I feel like we always have a good time reading short story collections that really focus in on specific communities in the Asian American diaspora. Yeah, and the stories in Crush do sound really interesting as well. It sounds like the stories will involve characters with a little bit more agency and a little bit more for lack of a better word, wokeness, right? For seeing through the lies of the world around us. And I think these days that's really important to depict, like in the modern age of AI slop, of clickbait and algorithms, I think it's really important to have stories that, you know, can help us model how to see through everything, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Our next book deal, Holiday House has acquired at auction Jocelyn Cho's debut middle grade graphic novel, The Golden Shoes. When 12-year-old Hannah finds herself whisked into a strange alternate universe, she enlists the help of fellow lost souls to set things right and get back home in this reimagining of L. Frank Baum's The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, inspired by traditional Korean folklore and K-pop idol culture. Publication is set for spring 2029.
Okay, so Korean folklore and K-pop idol culture. Two things that don't really go together, so interesting. and, you know, really love continuous reimaginings of Western classics like The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, Pride and Prejudice, you know, like.
Yeah. I wonder if this is going to be like the Korean version of like The Wiz, which is like the African-American reimagining of The Wizard of Oz. It is interesting to see how they will infuse like the Korean folklore and K-pop idol culture, right? I'm sure the Korean folklore probably in the setting and background, and the idol culture in like the politics, right?
I don't know. There seems to be a lot of stories these days where the characters go to an alternate universe. So I feel like that's the new trend that we've been seeing.
Yeah, I mean, it's the most popular genre in like Japanese anime, but also like The Wizard of Oz, like the OG of isekai, right?
Yeah, OG of isekai. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, but I wonder what sort of Oz is going to be, right? Is it going to be like the Wizard of Oz version was kind of like idealized, or is it going to be like the Wicked version, which is like more dark, right? Because with K-pop idol culture, it can go either way.
Yeah, I mean, it says fellow lost souls. So I'm wondering if, you know, they're ghosts. Like, we do have folk tales about, you know, traveling ghosts. So it might be that.
I mean, it's Wizard of Oz. So it's probably like Korean Tin Man, Korean Lion, Korean Scarecrow, right?
I mean, we're speculating. So, yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting premise. So I'm excited to hear more about it.
Yeah.
All right, next up, in a 7-figure multi-book deal, Simon & Schuster acquired Jenny Han's globally best-selling The Summer I Turned Pretty graphic novel series, which will be adapted by Cynthia Yuan Cheng and Ariel Havayanos, with Sarah Faber illustrating. Publication of the first book is slated for summer 2027.
All right, like, first off, congrats to Jenny on getting the graphic novel series based on her books. Congrats to everyone involved. This is a very hot property. But I will say, like, I bounced off so hard off of The Summer I Turned Pretty, the TV series. It's just, it's not for me. It's too messy for, like, my 42-year-old brain.
I mean, I've never read the books. I've never watched the show. It just, you know, didn't seem to be my speed. But I have a lot of friends who are really into the books, really into the TV show. It was kind of like a ritual for them. It was kind of like Game of Thrones, where they were really invested because it was so messy.
Yeah, I mean, it's tailor-made for like that sort of viewing. Like, if you love stories about messy young romance where like everyone is just making the worst decisions, and you know, you're not sure if either of these dudes are good for her, maybe the maker just suggest, you know, take some time, be single, and like have fun with her life. But yeah, definitely. Like, I know a lot of people who will be really into this graphic novel series, especially because I think the TV show kind of diverged from the source material a little bit. In addition to, like, they're making a movie now that like extends the story past the books, which is like this. It's just a very hot property, and, you know, very happy for everyone involved in this project, because it's probably going to be pretty exciting. And this is probably the case because we have some Asian Americans involved in writing it. But I know the main character Belly being Asian was not in the original text, which is something that was added to the show. And I'm assuming it's going to be the same case for the graphic novel adaptation as well.
Yeah, it's like interesting that they're doing a graphic novel series after a TV adaptation, because at that point, I'm like, are the actors going to be your character models? Are they going to look completely different? Yeah. So,
yeah.
Because it's usually the other way around. The graphic novel series comes out before the movies or the TV series, unless you're Hunger Games. And, you know, that was like a really hot property. So they were rushing it. But yeah.
But yeah, yeah. Like, I'm happy for everyone who is excited for this. I know there are a ton of you out there. Okay. Next up, Crown Books for Young Readers has acquired in a preempt Palestinian-born author-illustrator Balsam El-Baya's debut picture book, Before and Now, in which a girl reflects on moments from before, where joy was found in simple acts, contrasting them with moments now, when displacement from conflict has replaced this beauty with loss. As the past and present draw closer together, the girl realizes that hope can never be taken away and shows young readers the power of resilience and renewal. Publication is planned for spring 2028.
Definitely something that is, you know, much needed and timely now. Yeah, I feel like this is something that, you know, kind of gently eases children into serious topics like displacement.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of the biggest things that is, you know, in backdrop of everything happening in the world today. And I think, you know, like kids notice more than you think, and they hear more than we think. And so to have like ways to communicate with them, again, through picture book is really important for parents who like want to be able to raise kids who are able to, you know, critically think about things like genocide, war, displacement, refugees. And we often see books talking about past crises and the effects it has on like refugee populations. But, you know, unfortunately, we do have a situation where it's like it's a current and ongoing crisis. And, you know, these are things that kids these days are going to grow up being around and learning about. So it's, yeah, it's, I'm glad to see, again, picture books that can help parents, you know, communicate these things to your kids through dialogue.
Yeah. And it just like really breaks my heart that the readers that probably would have benefited from like seeing themselves represented, they probably can't get access to this book once it comes out. So, I mean, it comes out in spring 2028, so we can only hope that things get better. But yeah, congratulations to Balsam for their debut picture book. All right, next up, FSG acquired Tao News Goat for Dinner, Please, a picture book about a hungry alligator who wants goat for dinner, but is bamboozled into a cooking lesson where he discovers that goat is better as a dinner guest than an entree. Publication is scheduled for spring 2027.
This is cute. Yeah, I'm not sure where the lesson is here, but I'm sure there is one. Trust in the process. I mean, maybe this is just a cute book about an alligator learning that goats are fun to hang out with, and maybe they shouldn't eat goats because they could be eating a friend. I wonder if the alligator is taught to eat grass instead, or like some other like. Again, this is like a thing that pulled me out. Like, this is like the Goofy and Pluto problem in Disney, which is like when you have anthropomorphized animals, like, but also lower forms of animals. Like in Zootopia, you have like you have seals and you have animals with personalities, but also they eat fish. Apparently, fish didn't make it to the evolutionary jump for the other animals. Yeah, I think we're probably thinking a little bit too hard about this cute book. That's really just a cute. About this book for kids, which really probably mainly is there to just tell a cute story about friendship and how, you know, alligators and goats can get along if they just sit down and eat together. So yeah, congrats to Tao on the book deal. All right, next up, First Second has acquired Curiosities by Robert Kondo and Megan Bartel. Curiosities is a young reader graphic novel about a father and daughter exploring a fantastical world hidden in the woods outside their home. Publication is scheduled for 2027.
What is it about woods that lead to magical alternative worlds?
I mean, that's where the fairies live, you know?
Yeah, it is where the fairies live. but yeah, I'm curious as to seeing what the fantastical world is. Like, is it more like Alice in Wonderland, or is it more like Stranger Things, yeah, like the previous book deal that we announced earlier? So
it could, yeah, be like
it could go in a lot of directions.
Like, they can be going to like,
could be Inuyasha.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. it's called Curiosities, so I'm automatically thinking of Del Toro's like Cabinet of Curiosities, which is more horror, and yeah, it can go in a lot of directions.
So, yeah, I'm looking at Robert Kondo's Instagram, and I see some mannequin cats. I see some like very fairy-esque trees. So it could be all of the above.
It's more whimsy.
Either or. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, definitely interested in the fact that it's a father-daughter pseudo isekai, which is a nice twist. Usually I feel like in like stories about going to a fantasy world, it's just the kids going. But to have a dad to go with the kid is like that's an interesting angle to take as well, right?
Yeah, it is a pretty interesting angle that we don't see often. Yeah. All right, so next up we have Crown Books for Young Readers, Bought Sarah in Charge, a middle grade novel from Ellen O. 12-year-old Sarah doesn't have a great relationship with her grandmother, but at least she lives several states away. But life turns unexpectedly chaotic when Sarah's grandmother moves in after losing her home and life savings to a romance scammer. Publication is set for spring 2027. Ellen O is one of the founders of We Need Diverse Books. She's on the board now. And she's also the author of Finding Junie Kim, Spirit Hunters, The Colliding Worlds of Mina Lee. So she has been around the block for a while.
Yeah, we've mentioned her name countless times on this podcast over the last 10 years. So definitely, you know, one of these days we will get her on the podcast. Maybe this book will be a great opportunity. This sounds fun.
It makes me sad though, because she lost her life savings to a romance scammers. Like, yeah. They're such vicious scamming these days, and like old people, they don't know better. They get lonely, and yeah. It just makes me sad.
And you know this book can go a couple different ways. Like, she could either be a very naive grandmother, or like the type of grandmother who can't admit that she did anything wrong. But I also like that this book examines, a lot of people being scammed these days are our grandparents' age, right? Are people who aren't either familiar with technology or are just lonely and are vulnerable to scammers who like provide them with some human connection. There's this really great movie called starring Jerry S. himself that went around the Asian American film circuit a couple years ago that is about this specific phenomenon, which is like, the father of the filmmaker ends up losing his life savings because he's roped into this fake police investigation. And they were able to exploit him because they offer him someone to talk to because his own children weren't really calling him like that often. And so it's cool that Ellen O is exploring this phenomenon through the eyes of a 12-year-old child. And hopefully we'll encourage more kids to, you know, check in on their grandparents, make sure they're okay, not being scammed by randos. All right, next up, Kanath has bought world rights to This Is Our Diwali, written by Jyoti Rajangopal and illustrated by Michelle Pereira. The picture book is told in cumulative rhyme about all the well-loved Diwali traditions from one family. Publication is scheduled for fall 2027. Yeah, can't have a Books and Boba book news segment without a picture book about an Asian holiday. I feel like we can't get enough of these.
No, they always show up in our book deals, but I'm like, I mean, we can't complain. We didn't have any growing up.
Yeah, like I mentioned, picture books are like a really great way to communicate things like culture and heritage to our kids, especially for those of us in the diaspora who may have like a limited grasp of our own cultural traditions. And, you know, I'm sure there's YouTube videos out there, but, you know, sometimes we want to have some screen-free options as well for our kids.
Yeah, and rhymes are always great because it really penetrates the brain. It, like, really sticks with you.
Yeah.
I mean, think about all those nursery rhyme songs. Like, probably still remember them as adults. So, yeah, this sounds really cool. And congratulations to the author and illustrator. All right, next up, Delacorte Press acquired at auction The Book Witch by Nora El-Ghazawi, a debut fantasy romance inspired by Lebanese folklore. When a young author strikes a bargain with a handsome sorcerer and the stories she writes start coming true, her new power draws the attention of an eligible prince, leaving her with a choice: write herself onto the throne or risk her heart for a man who holds the key to her fate. Publication is set for summer 2027. I would be terrified if I had this power because I feel like a lot of the things I write are quite depressing. So I wouldn't want any of those things.
I know, in the hands of the wrong person, it could be like a death note, right?
Yeah, it could be like a death note, yeah.
But this sounds fun. I mean, you know, you got two eligible suitors. You got maybe this is just me being cynical, but the prince definitely has sus vibes. I wouldn't go for the prince. Maybe just go for the handsome sorcerer who gave you the powers. But then again, handsome sorcerer with the ability to give you the power of a death note, probably some sort of ageless demon or something, right?
I mean, if stories that you write start coming true, wouldn't you just write a memoir at that point? Because then it's like, yeah, make me rich, make me make me influential. It's probably not a good story, but it benefits you personally.
I mean, it's probably a be careful what you wish for type
be
of thing.
Be careful what
right?
you wish for. Yeah.
But yeah, you know, sounds like it'll be a fun ride. And you know, it's a romance, right? So maybe a fun steamy ride. But yeah, congrats to Nora on the book deal. Okay, so for our last book deal of this episode, Amulet Abrams has bought world rights to Magic Shoyu Shop by Debbie Michiko Florence and illustrated by Minako Tomigahara. This mystery series follows 10-year-old Chiyo, who, while making a delivery of her family's magic soy sauce, accidentally starts a chain of magical events that involves a Japanese dragon and tanukis. Publication is planned for spring 2028 and 2029.
So Debbie Michiko Florence is the author of the Jasmine Toguchi series. Like, she is very well known in like the early reader, middle grade space. And it's so great that she is writing a new series where you have magical Japanese folklore involved.
Yeah, I definitely like the idea of like a magical soy sauce family business. And, you know, always love to see Japanese dragons and, you know, tanukis. Tanukis are fun. They shapeshift. This sounds like it'll be a fun time. So congrats to Debbie and Minako on the book deal. I guess with that, we can move on to our book news. We don't have any Asian American related book news for this episode, but we do have something major for those of us who, you know, spend a lot of time reading on e-readers. Mira, can you fill us in what's happening with Kindles these days?
Okay, so starting May 20th, which is not that far away, Kindles from before 2013 won't be able to purchase, borrow, or download new content from the Kindle store. Obviously, the book community is very upset at this because of the forced obsolescence of devices. You know, they're still working without any issues, there's still battery life, and you know, you have it's not really advanced technology. You're pretty much reading a PDF file on a screen. So people are really upset because, you know, it's just like, why should I give up a device that I've had for years and I've been taking good care of and still works? And the other side to that, like there are other people who are saying, well, it's unrealistic for any company to provide tech support to devices older than 10 years. And I have some thoughts on that, but I'll get back to it later. So the affected models are, so if you have any of these Kindles, you probably got an email from Amazon already. So the affected models are Kindle First Generation, Kindle DX and DX Graphite, Kindle Keyboard, Kindle 4, Kindle Touch, Kindle 5, Kindle Paperwhite, First Generation, Kindle Fire Tablets, Kindle Fire First Gen, Kindle Fire 2nd Gen, Kindle Fire HD 7, and Kindle Fire HD 8.9. So these are all models that came out between 2007 and 2012. So users will still be able to read books that are already downloaded on their affected Kindle. So don't worry about books that you have already bought. Like, they're still there. But the problem is if you deregister your Kindle or if you like factory reset them, you will not be able to get those titles back. You will not be able to re-register with that Kindle and use the devices in any way. So be very careful. Amazon does plan to offer the affected users 20% off select new Kindle devices. So there is like a well, not a trade-in, because I don't think they're going to take your old Kindle. And a lot of tips I've been seeing online is that, you know, people can sideload books from a computer and via the software Calibre, which is an open source tool for converting, formatting, and transferring ebooks. A lot of people read from like Kindle Unlimited, which is a little bit different because of DRM rights. So yeah, this is kind of upsetting because Kindle, a couple of months ago, they were saying that, oh, the books that you bought, you don't own them anymore. You only own the license to read them, or they gave you like a short time frame to actually download the ebook onto your computer. Because I remember doing this to my library. I'm like, hell no, I spent so much money like collecting how many titles in my on my Kindle. I need to like save these onto my computer so that I actually own them. So this is just like an added added blow for ebook readers. What generation do you have for your Kindle?
My Kindle, I bought it in 2018.
Okay,
so
you're safe,
I'm not affected. My wife's Kindle is definitely affected. She did get that email recently. She has been putting off updating her Kindle for ever since I've known her. And so it's she is a little annoyed that she has to go buy a new Kindle. It's definitely a very Amazon thing to say, well, we'll give you opportunity to buy another Kindle from us, like for 20% off, which is like not that huge. It's a pretty good discount, but it doesn't make a new Kindle like that much cheaper, right? I feel like, you know, for those of our readers, for those of our listeners who are looking for ways to decouple from the Amazon Kindle ecosystem, this might be your chance, right? This might be your chance to go take a look at, you know, one of the other DRM-free e-readers. I know a lot of us are kind of locked into the Kindle library, but you can probably still access those on your smartphone / tablets too, if you want to read through that.
I'm a little bit curious about that too. So let's say you have an older Kindle, but you're reading on the Kindle app. You can't access the Kindle store with your Kindle anymore. So does that mean that your app can still access it? Because it's not like, because each Kindle has its own specific email address and its own ISBN. So,
I mean, I feel like most people probably just buy the new Kindle because they're already locked into the system. But again, this is, you know, if you're not bound to your Kindle library, and what you've already accumulated and are okay with moving on, this might be your chance to go on something more indie, a little bit more independent. But also,
but let me just say, when this announcement came and like I didn't know if my newer Kindle would be in like this purge, I was like, oh shit, like how am I going to read ARCs? Because we get digital ARCs and it's through NetGalley and you download it onto your Kindle or your e-readers. I'm like, do I have to read a PDF off of my computer? Because that's not an ideal way to consume books.
Yeah.
So it affected us. It affected thousands of bookish lovers. So, yeah, it was a really... Social media really was just like a group chat where people were complaining and people were fighting each other. And yeah.
And I think it just opens the door to this new reality where now that this is going through, all of our Kindles now have a time limit, right? Like, I don't think they're going to stop at the 2012, 2013 models. They're going to come after my 2016 model. They're going to come after your 2018 model.
Like, they're 2013. Gonna... right at the cusp. That's why I was like nervous. I'm like, oh shit. And the reason why I have two Kindles is because I was gifted them. So it's not like I overconsumed and bought like extra devices. But oh, man, I really hate corporate greed and how it's coming through and how we don't own things anymore unless it's physical. And I also think that it's really terrible that this is starting next month and they just notified people a couple weeks ago. And I'm like, really? You're giving people that short of a time span? Like, at least you can read books you've already downloaded onto your Kindle. But can you imagine if you weren't able to do that, if they just deleted all the books that were on your Kindle? Because they have the power to do that. So
yeah,
I'm just thinking if you're reading like a 400, 500 page fantasy novel on your Kindle and they decided, sorry, you don't own this anymore, and delete it off of your device, you know, we're not too far away from that future if they decide to be greedier.
I'm pretty confident they'll find a way. I don't think they're done juicing their user base yet. And until it gets to the point where it's like they've gone too far.
Again, you if something works, you don't have to replace it right away. Like, I hate this culture. Like, I can understand to a certain extent with, like, newer models of phones because they're built to crap out after, like, four years. And then, you know, it's cheaper to get a new phone than to get your old phone fixed. And sometimes you can't get your old phone fixed because repair centers don't have the license to fix the things. So it's kind of like that where I'm like, it's such a cash grab. It's unnecessary. Growth, infinite growth is not something that's sustainable. And we're already like dealing with over consumerism in, you know, in book communities. So I just feel like this is another thing to add onto.
Yeah. I mean, they're already making so much money on ebooks, which require like really no raw materials, just like some processing power. And like, it's, I don't know. It does seem a little unnecessary. Maybe there's some technical reasons for it. Maybe there's like a security reason for it. But in the end, I think, yeah, I think this like a 1 month notice that you're, you know, at this point, if you've been using your Kindle for that long, like some of these models are like over 10 years old, right? Almost 20 years old. Like if you've been using your Kindle for that long, it's more than just like a device. It is like it's your Kindle. It's your e-reader. And so I can also see why a lot of people are having an emotional reaction, because I feel like these have been their companions. This has like been like their you know, their decades long like journal that they've kept with them for like most of their lives at this point, right? So yeah, it's a sad day. Pour one out for everyone's, you know, everyone's legacy Kindle. And the ones are just not, they're not gonna be the same. They're gonna be lighter though. They are lighter these days, which is nice. But yeah, it's a bummer. This is the world that we live in. But yeah.
Oh my God.
All right. Well, I guess on that note, that'll do it for this edition of our mid-month book news check-in. As always, thank you for compiling all of our publishing and book news. Before we go, just a quick reminder that our April 2026 book club pick is The Elsewhere Express by Samantha Soto Yambao, about a magical train that spirits away people who have lost their purpose in life. It's pitched as a Ghibli-esque story, but I'm actually getting more like Paprika vibes from it. We are in the middle of reading it with our book club members. So if you are reading along with us and are a Patreon supporter, don't forget to chime in your thoughts on the book on our Discord server as we enter the last leg of our reading journey. As always, we'd love to include your feedback on our book club discussion episodes whenever possible. But yeah, thanks for listening, and we'll see you all next time on Books and Boba. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Books and Boba. This podcast was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu, and edited and produced by Marvin Yue. Follow the book club on Twitter and Instagram by going to @BooksandBoba, and engage with us on Goodreads on our Goodreads group. You can also check out past episodes of the podcast by going to booksandboba.com and by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. Don't forget, you can support Books and Boba and Asian American authors by purchasing books at our bookshop.org account. Check out the link in our show notes and also at booksandboba.com. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian diaspora. Learn more about the collective and check out our fellow Potluck shows by visiting the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening.
Podcast Asians in Baseball alongside Naomi Koh and Scott Okamoto. Asians in Baseball is exactly what it sounds like, a podcast about the Asian and Asian Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander Americans in Major League Baseball. Every week, we break down the highlights of what's going on with Asians in baseball and then take a deeper dive into the Asian and Asian Americans past and present who have shaped baseball as it is today. Whether you're Kim Eng's number one fan or you've never even heard of Hideo Nomo, we've got something for everyone. Especially for the Shohei Ohtani stands. Maybe too much for the Shohei Ohtani stands. Listen to Asians in Baseball wherever you get podcasts. Part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.
Hey, sports fans. Welcome to Asians in Hockey. You may not realize it, but there's a rich history of Asians and AAPI folks who have contributed to the legacy of the greatest game on ice. From classic legends like Julie Chu and Robin Bawa, to current greats like Lia Lum and Nick Suzuki, and even rising stars like Akane Shiga and Jason Robertson. We'll cover their stories, celebrate their accomplishments, and learn about their impact on the sport of hockey. I'm Nate Nakao, former Beer League player, occasional youth hockey coach, and longtime hockey fan, and I'll be your host as we take a look at the rise of Asians in hockey. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.